The hour of 2:30 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. We do not have a quorum, but we are going to start with the bills here so we can get through these. When we do have a quorum, I will move House File 1601, be recommended to lay it over in the Tax Committee here. You have some witnesses here. Representative O'Driscoll, if you could please present your bill and then we'll hear from your witnesses. Is there anyone in the crowd that would like to testify with concerns on the bill? Okay, and then I see that you have an amendment that you'd like to put on later. We don't have a quorum yet, so why don't you describe the bill as it would be amended. Representative O'Driscoll.
Chairman Davids and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be able to be here with you today. This is a kind of an interesting bill as I present it in the history of what got us here today. But I would like to discuss what the amendment is. This will involve three parcels of property that have three separate parcel numbers, and unfortunately when the bill was drafted, only two of the parcel numbers were included, and so the oral amendment that I will be offering today will include the third parcel of property, and I've provided that parcel number to staff, and when it's appropriate, we'll go through and give you that parcel number as part of the committee. The city of Sauk Rapids is located in Benton County, Minnesota, and Benton County, of the 87 counties we have in the state of Minnesota, falls clearly in the lower 50% of property wealth in the community, or I should say in the state of Minnesota. The city of Sauk Rapids is the largest city that's wholly contained within the county of Benton, and over the past 5 or 6 years, the city of Sauk Rapids has been negotiating and discussing possible building of a 192-unit apartment building within the city of Sauk Rapids with a developer. And for various reasons, the financing package was not able to be put together. The change in the economy made it more difficult as equity positions and down payments were being required to be larger by the financial institutions. What happened was about a little over a year ago, the determination was made that this property and this project could probably never get done. And the owner of the property began to enroll the property in the Green Acres program to meet the May 1st deadline, which is required by state statute. What happened in the interim was the state legislature last year passed the jobs bill, which included some expansion of the use of the TIF financing here in the state of Minnesota. Upon learning about this, the city of Sauk Rapids and officials went back to the developer and said, you know, maybe we can make that project work that we've been trying to do for the last 5 or 6 years. And they sat down, they looked at the numbers, and they thought that they could make it work. So they proceeded to visit with the county about how to take this property out of Green Acres and pay any associated penalties with it. They continued on with the project, and when they got to bond counsel, which is used to help to put together the underlying financing for the project, bond counsel red flagged and said the property was enrolled in Green Acres and is not eligible for the TIF financing, not under the Green Acres requirements, but under TIF. And we said, okay, what does that mean? They said that the project may not be able to go forward because it has to be out of TIF for a period of, excuse me, out of Green Acres if TIF is going to be used for a period of at least 5 years. And when I did some research here and learned of that, I visited with House research staff, and they were quick to say, no, I don't think that there's a problem with doing that. And I said, well, bond counsel has suggested that there is. And they said, let us do a little bit more research into it. And Mr. Hines, when he did some research into it, found out that, in fact, there is a 5-year period of time that the properties would need to be out of TIF. What we're asking for is, since June 30th is the day that of this year that the expanded TIF is currently ready to expire, and given the economy the way it is, this project will provide 50 to 60 new jobs in the community and will also help with the housing need in the Sauk Rapids community. And so what we're asking for is that the 5-year period under TIF be forgiven, if you will, for these three parcels, being that all the parties have been working in good faith and the opportunity with the jobs bill came forward after we had enrolled the property in the Green Acres program. One last item, and that is at the time that the developer looked to enroll the property in the Green Acres program, the Department of Revenue has a handout that's available, and the developer received that, but there was no information in there about the pros and the cons relative to using TIF financing if the property is enrolled. And so we're asking again for the help of the committee to allow us the opportunity to be able to take this property out and of the TIF requirement so that the developer can move forward. The developer has every intention of getting ready and to move dirt before June 30th. This is what we're finding to be the only obstacle that's in place, again, for putting 50 to 60 new jobs in and in this particular marketplace. And with that, I have four individuals from the city of Sauk Rapids, the city administrator, Ross Olson, the developer, Marty Riker, and the community development director, Todd Schultz, and council member, Jared Kapinski. And two of them will make brief statements to kind of supplement and be available for questions to the committee. I'd like to ask Mr. Schultz to join me and give some background as the community development director.
Okay, thank you, Representative Driscoll. First of all, we do have a quorum, so we'll officially call the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Mack moves the minutes of May 4th. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, to get the, I'd like to get the bill in the order that the author would like. We have an oral amendment, I believe, Representative Driscoll.
Yes, and the oral amendment deals with page one as in the one-page bill, line number 10. What we'd like to do is we'd like to delete the word and between the two parcel numbers that are there and insert a comma. And then we'd also like to then after that comma insert the word, after the second parcel number, delete the comma and insert the word and, adding this parcel number of 19.04176.00. Again, that parcel number, the word and followed by 19.04176.00. These are the parcels that would be in question to be able to do the development that I was speaking of.
Okay. And members, again, I'd like to get this bill in the shape the author like. We will not be voting on the bill itself, however. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. One quick question. I just want to make sure as we look at this, has the Green Acres, any Green Acres benefits been paid back?
Because, Mr. Chair, since this is agricultural property, those taxes aren't due until June. The property owner has received the property tax statement, but has given every indication that upon us acting as a legislature, being able to move forward, he's going to take that out of TIF and pay back his benefits.
Out of Green Acres?
Correct. And his first benefit would be due in the June payment of 2011.
Okay. Okay, please state your name for the record and who you represent, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Todd Schultz. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Sauk Rapids.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a lot to add to Representative O'Driscoll's testimony. However, just a couple things quickly. In reference to the 60 jobs, just to put that in perspective, the city was contacted about 2 weeks ago from a local manufacturer who's interested in adding 150 jobs to our community. We're currently in competition with Latin America and several South Asian countries. They contacted us and the state to inquire about any help that might be potentially available. And in working with them, according to the state, this 150 job project that they're working on is one of the largest projects in the state. So to be able to add this additional 60 is a pretty significant project in our community. In addition, I would just like to add that in addition to the taxes that this project would generate ultimately, which would be over $300,000 in local taxes per year, it's at the end of a very important corridor that the city is currently focused on attempting to develop. And it would provide a level of housing that currently does not exist in our community.
Questions for Mr. Schultz. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to some degree this is to the author as well as Mr. Schultz, but my understanding at Green Acres was it was always about preserving agricultural land, and some of us have always suspected that it was really about more about holding land for future development than it was about farming into perpetuity, and I think this is an example of that, and I'm wondering, this. You said that you know they were going to pay back any benefits or ask that their tax form be modified, but it seems to me that any benefits that have accrued by registering in Green Acres should definitely be paid back to the local districts, and I think we should as we in the future relook at Green Acres, have some penalties for this kind of use of it, because it does call into question what I think is a legitimate use of Green Acres for people who are at the edge of development, who don't want to pay developed land prices, but who intend to farm for the next 10 or 15 years, not for people who just want to hold it until the market improves and somebody comes along with a good job development proposal. And so if the representative of the city or the author would like to clarify the public benefits now or in the future and whether or not they will be repaid, and your attitude towards us addressing this in the future, because it is an example, and it could be interpreted as a precedent that I don't think we want to get into.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, you bring up a very good question, and I think I would like to have the developer himself tell his story about how he did that, if that's all right, Mr. Chair.
Before we do that, Representative Loeffler, then Representative Carlson has a question, I believe, of Mr. Schultz. Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. I would really prefer not to have the developer answer that, because this is a matter of public policy, and I really think that the policy leaders should be the people to answer, whether or not we have addressed the issue of payback, because that is an issue of public policy in terms of the benefits of Green Acres, and get it on the record that it perhaps, if it's you agree that it was not your intent, that this be a precedent that Green Acres can, we're going to go backwards when people have a new development opportunity show up, that, as a matter of course.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Representative Loeffler, the reason that this situation had occurred was the developer had said, you know what, after 5 or 6 years of attempting to try to develop this property, not being able to do it, and because it is in the location on the edge of town in an agricultural area, he wanted to enroll that property. It was at the city's request that he was approached to see if they could continue to do this project. So it's not the developer coming back and saying, hey, I wonder if. It was at the city's initiative.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, the intent that someone is supposed to convey in enrolling their land in Green Acres is that they intend for a significant period of time to actively farm that. It is not to be a land holding for future development set aside. And so that's where I think this particular parcel and how it was handled, and you're asking us to make a special law exemption for them, tends to call into question the whole issue, because it was Green Acres is not supposed to ever be used as a way to just set things aside while you wait for a developer to come along. It's supposed to be that you actively intend to, for a long period of time into the foreseeable future, you know, you do intend to use your land as agricultural. It's not, and so to change our TIF laws to carve this out, I think is a real precedent, but I also haven't heard the answer to the question of if there have been economic benefits to that property in the future or in the next property tax year, and whether or not those will be repaid by the property owner to the city, the county, the township, whatever it is, that schools that have foregone tax receipts as a result.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Representative Loeffler, Mr. Chair, that is the intention, is to make whole as though financially this had never been enrolled in Green Acres.
Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chair, and maybe our council could actually look at whether we could draft something that would make that happen, because I do think this could be cited in future cases as a precedent, and I think it's better to have it clear what our expectations are in those circumstances. And I know you're going to be laying this over, so there's time to consider that in the future. Thank
okay.
you.
Did you want to talk to House Research or have them comment on how they might do that, or
I think they'll work on it offline, and I'm sure with the author to try and clarify that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Loeffler. I have Representative Carlson, Lincheski, and Kiffmeyer. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's been a couple, 3 years since we did a site visit and looked at a farm up there that I think it was called the Daler Farm. This isn't the Daler Farm.
This is not the Daler Farm.
But there was interest. I guess that answers it. There was interest in that becoming a parkland because of its close proximity. It actually butts up against the river. So I was just curious. Different parcels.
Same, Mr. Chair. Same district, different parcels.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Loeffler did a good job of explaining, you know, the obvious concerns that the tax committee should have, rural, metro, and Democrats and Republicans. you know, the Green Acres is a subsidy where everybody else pays your taxes for you, and now you're asking for a new subsidy where the county pays the taxes, lets you keep your incremental tax to roll back into your project. And so I think the idea of having some language that's very clear that if something was going to benefit you in Green Acres, that it is going to be returned to the taxpayers. But, you know, I guess I would, you know, I just think it's this committee, many of the people in this room, even though lots of folks have had to go home now for the weekend, but are authors of, and I don't know if you are, but are authors of the bill that passed. And I think this bill, this particular bill right now, highlights why many still feel that the Green Acres change is not going to solve much, and we removed the covenants now, and so this is the bill. This bill, we're still in the same session, and we're going to see people try to continue to make the system work for them. And unfortunately, I think the testimony here is demonstrating that we have a developer who was doing exactly what Green Acres was not intended for. Very expressly, it is not to bank property until it gets into a void tax, until such time that the benefit you receive to develop the land now is even higher than the taxes you would have paid plus more. So you're getting very wealthy at the expense of all the other taxpayers in those communities, and it's really not a comment on this bill, it's a comment to this committee. I mean, people are getting hoodwinked by this, and I know people don't want to understand the facts of the failures of Green Acres, but I think this bill highlights it. Mr. Chair, I think if you allow this to proceed, I think the Loeffler Amendment, if it becomes this author's amendment, I hope, is a minimum requirement. I would hope there would be further language that this project could not receive Job Z, could not receive all kinds of things. They're, you know, already set to go in a line of subsidy here, and this is what we need to stop, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And Representative Chesky, that's why I asked the question initially. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it might be useful to point out that a couple things. One, this has been done before. It's been done before as a matter of general law, when originally this restriction on Green Acres, well, there's a sort of a history with tax increment in Green Acres that, as Representative Lencheski is very well familiar, a sort of a signature property in her district was in Green Acres, and by her city was put into a tax increment district back in the mid-80s. And the legislature at that time changed the law in a way that prevented the removal from Green Acres. There's a value increment when you remove property from Green Acres from being captured by tax increment. It did not prevent taking parcels out of Green Acres and putting them in tax increment. It said that growth in value that occurs from removal from Green Acres cannot create captured value that will generate increment. In 1995, Representative Osmond, who had a similar experience with another property in his district in Rosemont, put into law the provision that this bill seeks an exception from, which says that if your property was in Green Acres 5 years before, in any of the 5 years before, it cannot be included in a tax increment district. Subsequent to that, the law was amended to create general law exceptions because new developments came along. One that allows housing districts, originally it was qualified housing districts, it was changed to housing districts later on, and those are of course for income restricted housing projects to be located in a parcel that had Green Acres, and then also for a manufacturing project to go out of Green Acres and into TIF without qualifying. The bill, I would point out, already does what Representative Loeffler asked, which is it says that in order to qualify, it has to be withdrawn from the program, and so pretty much ensures that they won't get any benefits from Green Acres. What you could think about doing, because there are certain kinds of properties that can go out of Green Acres and right into TIF under current law, you could write into the Green Acres law a longer payback for any landowner that does that. If you want to think about a way to impose a restriction, but what this bill is asking for has been done a couple times before by the legislature in these sort of different contexts for manufactured and qualified housing. What's different about this is it's just a district-specific project because they're using the 2010 jobs bill provision.
And I thought this would go on the consent calendar. Silly me. You still have the floor, Representative Linchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, again, that jobs bill was meant to be temporary, and I think that the change that was made in Green Acres to reform would have fixed a bunch of this. Was a bunch of it was undone now. So a lot of this is going to keep going. But, Mr. Chair, you know that piece of land in my district, I'll bring it in to you. I think they've avoided $20 million in property tax. And people don't think there's Green Acres in the metro, but in my district, $20 million they've avoided in property tax that my residents pay for them.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. We'll go to Representative Kiffmeyer. Are there other members? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns on this bill or for this bill? And I believe Representative O'Driscoll had another testifier. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Lay
the bill over.
Okay. Now, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the merits of the bill are being well debated and well discussed. I think I just want to address the issue that we allow testifiers. It may affect them or not affect them, but we have allowed testifiers, and I just disagree with the previous statement that somehow it would be inappropriate for somebody here to testify or to share their knowledge or interest in regards to this bill. Mr. Chairman, I think when we have testifiers here, to accord them that respect, to hear from them, is up to us then to have a policy discussion and make a decision.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. I think Representative Lothar, and she can certainly speak for herself, was more she didn't feel she needed the developer to answer her question, and so not that we won't hear from him. So
I'm glad to hear
or
that,
her,
Mr. Chairman.
Or whoever.
Thank you.
Yes.
It is. Okay, is that okay, Representative Lothar? I mean,
Mr. Chair, that was absolutely correct. I just felt that the question was an answer that the developer wouldn't be prepared to answer because it's a policy question.
Thank you. Okay, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jared Gopinski. I'm on the council of City of Sauk Rapids.
Hold on, Counselor. K-A-P-I-N-S-K-I?
G-A-P-I-N-S-K-I.
Gopinski. It's Polish. It's not K, but you pronounce it as a G. It's a G.
Yep.
I did pretty good.
Really good.
Please give us your testimony, sir.
Thank you for having us. I'm not going to speak a lot other than the fact that I just want to reiterate what this means to our county, our city, and the citizens of that area. This is absolutely huge. We've had a lot of development that we've been trying to gain there due to economic downturn. It has been stalled mainly by financial backing. But we have a project that is ready to turn dirt by June, and we really, really need this in our community.
Any questions for Councillor Gopinski? Thank you, sir. Representative O'Driscoll, did you have anyone else that wished to testify? We'll certainly hear from them, or are they here as a resource?
They were here as a resource at the committee's disposal.
Okay. Any other questions of the author from members? With that, I will lay the bill over at this time. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you, members.
The bill is laid over.
Thank you for your time.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Before we go on to the next bill, I'd like a little continuation from the last meeting. We were talking about Harvey Haddix.
Yes, sir.
Who pitched the 12 perfect innings and then went into the 13th. Did a little more research on that, baseballreference.com. And the Pirates, who Harvey pitched for, out-hit the Braves 12-1. And got beat 1-0. And then in the bottom of the 13th inning, the first guy got on by an error for the Braves. Then the next guy had a fielder's choice that advanced the person to second. Haddix then intentionally walked Hank Aaron. And then, as Mr. Michael had mentioned after the meeting, Joe Adcock hit the winning run, a big double that went to the wall and scored the winning run. But Eddie Matthews was on that Braves team. I think Del Crandall, Hank Aaron. And so with those 12 perfect innings, Harvey Haddix had to go through those guys four times. That would have been the fifth time he went through that. And one more note is that the winning pitcher, Lou Burdett, who had won three games in the 57 World Series, also went the route, pitched all 13 innings, and got the win. So you wouldn't have seen that today. Those pitchers probably
Representative Marquardt, was that would have been the Milwaukee Braves?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
What field was it at? So who was the home team? It would have been
Milwaukee.
Mr. Michael would know this. Mr. Michael, as he was saying afterwards, actually listened to this game on radio from the seventh inning on.
Mr. Michael, was that which Milwaukee field would that have been? Not Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was at County Stadium.
County Stadium.
I think so.
Okay.
And, of course, the Braves team, you know, had gone to the World Series twice before. And
well, I feel better. And members, I would announce that, thank you, Representative Marquardt. I would announce that our next full tax meeting will be Tuesday, May 10th, 2011, 10:15 a.m. And please look at your emails for the bills. I know one of them is the arts and crafts bill, legacy bill. Okay. Mr. Michael, I will move so we have before us, well, let's see here, House File 1219, the Omnibus Tax Policy Bill, And members, this is a walkthrough only. We're going to be working off the A11-0445 document that you have before you. On this one we won't have any amendments today or any vote, but we will be working on this one also. Next Tuesday. Mr. Michael, please, if you could please present the Davids bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am not going to go through this section by section because the committee went through just all of this, most of this recently, and so I don't want to bore you with that. What I will do is I will go through and describe which bills are in this amendment and which provisions out of the department bills have been removed and which additional bills have been added, and there's a couple of new provisions that I will also describe. So we're not going to bore you, so you can move on to whatever your next item of business is.
Well, Mr. Michael, you're assuming that I was bored.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I was assuming I was going to bore you.
Representative Bills.
Mr. Chair, to that point, as I brought up earlier, my daughter's having a birthday party tonight with a dozen teenage girls, and if Mr. Michael would like to go through the whole thing, as Mrs. Bills has requested that I help tonight, I would really actually appreciate it. But no.
Mr. Michael, could you please go till tomorrow? And members, we heard a lot of the governor's proposals
twice.
and so I think the way you're going to outline this is just fine with the committee, Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, my daughter is in her high school play tonight, so if I did that, I would be in really big trouble.
I'll take one.
But I could have some of our other House research staff fill in if you want. What is contained in this bill is the Department of Revenue policy bill that you heard presented last night or two nights ago or whenever it was. My memory is fogging on that. House File 1316 with the department's amendments. What has been removed from that bill are two sections that increase the statute of limitations for the estate tax from 6 months to 3.5 years. Otherwise, it's the department's policy bill with the department's amendments. The next bill that's contained in the amendment is the department's technical bill, House File 1219. That's the base bill with the department's amendments with the provision relating to software installation that I think you recall there were various members of the representatives of the business community testified about that has been removed. Representative Loon's property tax appeal bill with the amendment, House File 1456, the changing of the
disclosure production requirements that was agreed between the Bar Association and assessors is in this bill with its amendment. Representative Dill's bill for his resort, married couple that owns two resorts in an LLC, is in this. House File 902, it's Article 3, Section 7. The Sauk Rapids bill that we just heard with the amendment is also in this bill. Representative Biskin's bill, this is one that goes back a while that you may not remember. This is the treatment of game farms for waterfowl, where you're raising waterfowl not to shoot them on the premise but to have them shot off the premise. That's in here.
Why is that in here again? How does that affect anything to the taxes?
Mr. Chairman, it relates to the tax treatment of those game farms so that they qualify for agricultural treatment, just like the game farms where you actually shoot the birds there. Now, there are two new provisions. The first one is in Article 1, Section 9. If you want to turn it might be better to look at the summary for this. This is largely a technical, well, it's not large, it is a technical change to the refund provisions. There was a provision that was enacted back in the middle 90s governing circumstances in which if our treatment of tax-exempt bond interest, where we tax only exempt only Minnesota bond interest, was held to be in violation of the Commerce Clause, then the intent of the legislature was to tax that interest, not exempt out-of-state interest. The Supreme Court ruled and held that governmental bonds, you can discriminate against governmental bonds. They left undecided the question about whether private activity bonds can be discriminated against. So this changes that provision to only apply to private activity bonds. And the next provision is the next and last new provision is in Article 6, Section 8. And this simply requires when there's a request made for tax incidence analyses, similar to what was done for the governor's bill and the House and Senate bills this time, that the Department of Revenue will need to notify the chairs of the two tax committees. Those are all the provisions. And if members have questions about, Ms. Manzi fortunately reminded me, there are three other provisions that in Representative Gunther's bill, the committee took out those angel credit recommendations from the Department of Employment and Economic Development out of Representative Gunther's bill, and those provisions, which are largely clarifying and technical, with no cost, those provisions are in this bill as well.
Any questions for Mr. Michael?
I just have a question on the tax incidents about the confidentiality. The chair has to now be notified if someone makes a request. And I don't know if that was spurred because I said that I made a confidential request a good month before yours came out. And I hope you'll think about that because they take a long time, and I think, you know, you don't see anyone ask for them but tax chairs and tax leads and governors. I mean, that's probably about the only people. I mean, and the reason why I would just ask you as a chair to think about that, I requested them on my own bills as chair so I could understand that what I suspected what I was doing in making attempts to change incidents was accurate. So I was able to find out, okay, I thought I'm, you know, in total now moving this big thing through the process and it's going to do X, but I wanted to make sure it was actually doing what I thought so that I could change it. And so I think if you're going to put that in, you risk undercutting your own work in the future, that even your draft sort of omnibus tax bills become kind of a working document for the public. And so I think you just might want to think about that, because you know how everybody here takes every little thing and it's a press conference? I just ask you if you just to think about that maybe over the weekend. Do you really want to do it that way? Because if every request goes public, how do you think strategically with your, you know, caucus on what you're really trying to do? Just to think about it.
Mr. Michael, where is that in the 0445, or where is that in the summary?
Page 14.
On page 65 of the bill. It'd probably be useful to actually look at the bill language.
Okay.
There's only four. Page 65 of the amendment.
What's the practical effect of that language? It just says that
essentially what, Mr. Chairman, what it will require is that if there's a request on a bill made to the Department of Revenue to prepare one of these, you know, extensive incidence analyses, that the department then will just notify the chairs of the two tax committees that a request has been made and that the department is going to go ahead and do the analysis. I don't think it would actually require the. I mean, if it relates to an introduced bill, obviously, you're going to know what the contents of the bill are. So, lest it doesn't require, if it's a confidential request, that the nature of the underlying proposal be disclosed. It's just disclosure that a request has been made and the department's working on.
If a chair in the future couldn't find out what it is, then what's the point? Just that they're doing it?
Mr. Chairman, essentially this is just a notice that it's going on, that the request, you know, that the request for an incidence analysis of a bill has been made. So I think you would know that at some point it will become available. And the other thing to point out about this is the only two officials that actually have the power to request this that the department actually is compelled to comply with are the chairs of the two committees. Now, anyone else can also, you know, any member could ask for it, but the Department of Revenue then has discretion to decide whether or not they want to do it. This is one instance where the ranking minority member that does not have, for example, the power to sort of compel the department to do this. So, this really is just sort of a notice provision.
Kirsten Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would add here, if you go forward with this, as far as the notification, not the request, I think the when we see these in other places, the notification should go to the minority leads as well. But I just think you might want to think about this one a little bit, because, for example, if you are requesting it, you get a notice to yourself that you're requesting it. But
just remind me.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I mean, I'll just be really candid. I was working really hard on tax expenditures for 4 years, and I was making guesses about, I think if we got rid of this tax expenditure, it would move the incidence dial this way, or if I got rid of that one, it will move it the way I don't want it to. And you're taking your sort of best guess and you're putting it all together, and you can be completely wrong, and there you are with House File 42, and you think you know what your bill does, and you're just completely wrong. Now, you had a tax incidence on your House File 42 as you made it public, and you would choose to do that. But if draft 123, you had been asking Dr. Wilson to take that run at it, then that would be out there. It may not be released, but people would be afoot. So, I mean, I'm not sure that I even know it's good or bad. I think you just have to think about what that means. And you have all the power here to say, I'm in first place. You and the governor are in first place on getting all this stuff and getting there.
No,
fine.
I'd be in first place. You'd be second.
You and Senator Ortman and the governor are the ones that are going to be able to get what you need for sure.
Right.
But I don't know if you want to. I think about that for a little.
No, we'll talk about that. Representative Lincheski, we'll certainly visit about that. Any other questions of Mr. Michael? Seeing none again, the next meeting is Tuesday, 10:15. And folks, have a good weekend. Mr. Michael, have a good play. Mr. Bills, Godspeed. Happy Mother's Day. Good government all the time. We adjourn.